Good morning, everyone. Tim O'Brien here. Welcome to the eighth of the series of BAUS podcasts. Today's subject is audit. Surgeon reported audit has been an absolutely central feature of BAUS's work since 2012, and the systems we use are changing. And we felt it would be extremely useful for the members to be brought up to date with how those changes are taking place, when they're taking place, and what it will mean for members in general. Andrew Dickinson is the chair of the BAUS Audit Steering Group, and he's convened this meeting today. He's been involved in a lot of the negotiations over the changes. And with him are Greg Shaw and Tarani Nitkunen, who've also been central figures in the way that BAUS audits developed. So without further ado, Andrew, why are we changing and what are the main changes?
It's a really good question, Tim, and I think it's a good opportunity for me just to sort of tell the members about the changes that are coming and how we are taking it forward. But the real reason why we changed, the registries were great. There are outstanding things that we've done in the UK and are world recognised. But there came a point, I think a few years ago, we decided that there is a limit to the amount of extra knowledge or extra data you can gain from just adding and adding. So the difference between putting 70,000 nephrectomies on a registry and 75,000 nephrectomies on a registry is fairly small. And those are the sort of numbers we were talking about.
I see. That idea of, you know, were we going to learn anything more from collecting data in the same way with the same limitations, the same advantages, but the same limitations? And I think the feeling then was presumably that BAUS felt there was relatively little to be gained by that.
Yeah, but perhaps more importantly, we started to realise that there was an awful lot of duplication going on.
Right.
And that we as surgeons were spending a lot of time pulling notes, filling in a database. Mm. And that data was already being collected through another method. And at the time, 2 or 3 years ago, we started to realise that and started to have negotiations with GIRST and NSIP. Now, NSIP at that time stood for National Clinical Improvement Program. Mm-hmm. It subsequently changed its name, and I'll get to that in a moment. But we realized that actually this data was being collected and collected from HESS. So this was what the trusts were doing. And at that moment, we realized that perhaps we could provide a better, more user-friendly and less time-consuming platform for surgeons, particularly urologists, to look at their data and their surgical outcome data, which in a sense has become even more essential because of the changes or the developments in appraisal with the Patterson report.
I see. So why have surgeons inputting data if that data is being routinely collected was one of the issues. I see. Yeah. The BAUS surgical registries didn't cover all the operations, did they? They centered on a few of the cancer operations. That always felt a bit unbalanced. Would you agree with that as the audit chair?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that was the other great value we were going to get out of NSIP was that we would be increasing the number of procedures that people could access. So the dashboard at the moment in NSIP's got 17 procedures on it, and they are hoping to extend it. Shall I just cover how we've developed that relationship and that partnership?
Yeah, that would be useful, actually. Many of the people listening may not know much about NSIP and what it can do.
Yeah, so we've been in a good negotiation with NSIP, and we used our registries really to help validate their data and show that there was really good correlation between the HESS data and what we were collecting. So we felt confident that the platform would provide what we wanted from it. It's a web-based portal. There are people that have access, and that is the individual surgeon and your responsible officer medical director. That's because it fits within that envelope of appraisal. It provides you with surgical outcome data of the procedures on the dashboard. So off the top of my head, nephrectomy, cystectomy, TURBT, percutaneous stone removal are all on there. So they are the main players of what we do.
Yeah, I was very impressed with the pilots that were shown to me. I looked at my practice using the routinely collected data, and I was astonished actually how accurate it was. There were one or two assignation issues. I think there were one or two patients who were assigned as my patients who weren't my patients. I was very impressed with the pilot. I never thought that routinely collected data would be as accurate as it was.
No, it's really good. The strength of the partnership, which we spent a long time negotiating, is now that we are the vanguard surgical speciality in England.
Okay. So this hasn't been done with any other surgical specialty?
Not to the point of being rolled out to all 127 units in England.
So why did they choose urology? What's so special about us?
Because we were so engaging and we had really good quality data behind us that they realized that we would be the best specialty to take it forward and develop it. Because not only are we all going to have access, the plan is to get 50 trusts up and running by BAUS, 50 more by September, remaining 27 by the end of the year.
That sounds like an ambitious timeline for an NHS project.
It is an ambitious timeline. The timeline has started and we have already engaged 36 trusts.
Okay, so the timing seems good here because we're closing the dendrite platforms at the end of March, and simultaneous with that, the NSIP rollout is taking place.
So the first time deadline for BAUS members to be very aware of is that the first 50 trusts in this process will be going live on the 18th of June.
Yes, so the timing has been really well judged. It's a great opportunity for us to take it on. Not only are we getting the rollout of the platform that you have seen, Tim, but we've also, within that business plan for NSIP, have the ability to develop it. And I think that's the really exciting bit for urology.
Okay.
So we will be developing it, but not only for urologists, but this is for the whole of surgery. So if we get it right, it will be rolled out to all the other 9 surgical specialties.
Very good. I might just bring the other guests in to the conversation. Tarani, you've studied this process in detail as well. You're a member of the audit steering group, aren't you? What do you see as the benefits of the switch to a different system?
I think it's great. I think it enables us to look at our own data from individual consultant data, as well as unit data. And that information is already being collected, but it's being presented to us so we can look at our own data.
Yeah.
And that enables us to look at various things. So I've looked at my pediatric orchidopexy data and able to say, yes, the number that I'm doing is a good number. The complication rates are low. So I'm able to look at my own data. And then at a more of a unit level data, with the whole drive of moving towards day case bladder outflow surgery, there's data in there that we can then look at to then improve our own unit standards. So lots of growth that we can use this platform to grow as a unit.
And presumably quite a lot of your operative practice wasn't included in the dendrite system at all.
My subspecial interest is female urology and pediatric urology, and I've taken up HoLEPs as well.
Right.
So yes, the dendrite data gave me insight into my patients managed for continence, but not the other things that I do. So yes, it gives me more opportunities to look at my data.
I might just bring Greg in. Greg, this issue comes up a lot amongst type A surgeons, this individual data versus unit data. And are there some concerns you have about other people's results being assigned to you or your results being assigned to somebody else? Or how do you see that panning out?
Yes, a really interesting point you raise. I think the data integrity was always a concern when I first started looking at this data. But the team are quite involved. And with a little bit of tweaking and comparing with records that I'd kept, I was able to reassure myself that the data quality was good. We had to find a couple of systematic errors that were taking place in the way that the data was harvested. But once that was ironed out, it's incredibly accurate and I trust it. I've come to find it quite useful for a number of things. The first, I find it useful for audit. The way the data is presented is really user-friendly. You get box and whisker plots with your outcomes compared to the national levels, which is really useful. You can generate a PDF of your practice in a matter of seconds, which you can then use for your appraisal. So it's really user-friendly.
Yeah. That sounds really good. You're a prostate cancer surgeon, aren't you? How does this sit with the National Prostate Cancer Audit data?
I think there's certainly a lot of scope for linking the two data sources. They're complementary. They collect data from different sources. I had a chat with Noel Clark, who leads the National Prostate Cancer Audit, last week about this potential synergy. How it pans out, I'm not sure, but there certainly is scope for cooperation. The data points that are collected are very different, but they're on the same patients. So there should be some way to put it all together. I'm sure that'll come about in time.
Okay, that's great. Dickie, back to you. Is it operative data? Is it about diagnostics as well, or is that something for the future? What's the scope of the NSIP program?
No, it starts with operative. So that's the basis at the moment. So it'll give you the volume you've done, your length of stay, your complications, and really importantly, it'll give you your readmissions. But because it's linked to the NHS number, you know where your readmissions are. So if you have a practice like Greg, and you may well be dealing with an awful lot of patients outside the London area, you will know whether they've been readmitted. So you know if they've been readmitted to Devon, you've been readmitted to Cornwall. And that's never happened before. So that's a really powerful tool.
That's of huge interest to me. I mean, obviously in Guy's, we are taking patients from all over the place, and actually tracking how they're doing is quite a challenge. That sounds very interesting.
Sounds excellent, actually.
Do you see opportunities for benchmarking your practice, Tarani, against the other people like you?
Yes, I think you can take every single procedure and benchmark either against your unit or nationally. If I wanted to improve things further, I would want outcomes which are meaningful for patients. So ideally for the prostatectomists out there, for me to counsel my patients, I would love to be able to tell them this is the continence rate post-procedure, this is the erectile dysfunction rate of that procedure for that surgeon or for that unit. And that would be really informative, not just for surgeons, but for our patients.
Okay. Dickie, I'm going to pin you down about something that always concerns me about routinely collected data and coding. Is the process quick enough to get the new procedures that people are doing? You know, just take something like BPH. There's this avalanche of new procedures, Resume and Urolift and all those things. Can the system keep up with the pace of change in neurology?
I think that's a really good question, Tim. And I do believe it can. But if you'd asked me that question a few years ago, I would have said no. But in the whole of this development with NSIP and GERFT, we've started to understand how the process works. And we have therefore had the ability to clinically lead some of these processes. So we've had a really good relationship with a coding project and have produced some much better quality coding. We understand how we can introduce new codes. And now with NSIP and the need for these codes, because the surgeons will want them, I think there's an impetus in the system to make it happen more quickly. You're absolutely right.
Okay.
For prostate operations, you don't want to know what your TURP rate is. You want to know that broken down to green light, Resume, Urolift, et cetera. So that is definitely a development that we should be pushing for, and it's possible.
Okay. Back to you, Greg, if I would. Now, I know that one of the things that can send 58-year-old surgeons like me spiraling into depression and retirement is introduction of new tech. Who's going to help dinosaurs like me get going with this new system? Am I going to have to find a friendly 30-year-old at Guy's who can help me?
The friendly 30-year-olds come with the team. So there is support provided by the NSIP team to get you set up and using the software.
And is it imagined that support will be on the ground or remote?
I'd imagine in the current climate, it will be remote.
Tarani, you've got your hand up. Are you offering me personal support to get
absolutely
me through this
therefore
process? Yeah, everyone at Guy's is now laughing at O'Brien having to introduce new tech into his life.
You know, it's really simple. You just sent an email with your username. You can set up your own account, and it is simple. We had someone from NSIP just come to talk us through it at our departmental meeting, and all the consultants have their own accounts now.
Dickie, over to you. I'm a urologist listening in St. Elsewhere's. How do I know whether St. Elsewhere's has been contacted? Who will tell me?
The process is that we're rolling out to the first 50 trusts. How we've chosen those is because they're large trusts, they're good geographical distribution, they've been engaged with NSIP previously or with the registries, so that we've got those trusts on the first 50. But eventually everybody will be contacted. At the moment, we'll be contacting you with an email, and that will be an invitation just for a quick run through by myself, Marina, who is the lead implementation for the NSIP program. And we will show you the program, and then we'll describe the process being an email to your medical director, because they are invited to participate. And once they've accepted, then we will contact information governance and eventually your electronic staff record to allow you to access it. And as Tarani said, what then happens is you're sent a link. It's very easy to just press onto that link and then you're off and having a look at the data.
One other concern people raise about surgical outcome data, and I remember this was such an important question back in 2012 when we were dealing with surgical outcome data, is who owns the data? Who will have access to my data?
The data will be owned by yourself, and the two people who have access are yourself and your responsible officer, medical director. So it won't be published, it won't be out in the public domain, and it is excluded from freedom of information requests.
So that's different from the BAUS data then, because the BAUS data was published. O'Brien's data was available for anyone to look at, wasn't it? This data will not be like that.
No, it's different. They've changed that. They felt that really what we needed to do was get real confidence in this throughout the whole of the surgical fraternity. And once that has happened, I don't know what will happen in the future. Yes, we maybe. But I think if we engage and own and develop this data, we will feel secure in it. And at that point, it may well be to the point of releasing. But that's not going to be for a long time. I suspect I'll be retired before that occurs.
Okay. A question that comes up a lot about these issues surrounding outcomes and surgeon performance is the surgeon isn't the only person affecting the performance. Will this system reflect that, or will it continue to have the problems that the surgeon is perhaps overemphasized in the outcomes that a patient may get from an operation?
That's a really interesting question, in as much as I think it's ultimately going to be your data because you're the named person. But the way I can see it developing is it will integrate into other systems, such as the theatre system, such as potentially cancer follow-up. So yes, others will be involved. I suppose that's a sort of moral question. Who is actually ultimately in charge? Is it
yes,
the consultant, or is it the whole team? So
Simon Kendall, who heads the Cardiothoracic Association, says they're campaigning at the moment for much more unit-based approaches to these things. There's an understanding that not everything is about each individual surgeon, and a lot of things relate to the performance of the unit rather than the performance of the individual.
Yeah, I think he's absolutely right. And as Thani mentioned, you can look at your unit data. It may well be really important for urological networks. It may be good at regional and national level. At this moment in time, we're still a named consultant, and the NHS is run on a named consultant. There's no doubt that as we develop things, teamwork becomes much more the way people want to work, then it will be unit data. But this is really strong for unit data.
And it's only for consultants. The SAS doctors won't be able to get their individual reports.
That's something that we're developing. It's linked to your GMC number. So they are presumably registered with the GMC, and it's individual patients under their name. So if they have their patients under their name, there's no reason why that shouldn't be there. That needs a little bit of thought and a little bit of exploration, but I'm really positive because I think that's a really important thing to empower that group, really.
We are in the vanguard of this. I think that's something that we perhaps ought to be in the vanguard of as well, is for the first time that doctors who are practicing almost independently or as independent urologists are able to see their practice reported as such.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I think it's a great way to shape surgery going forward, and we are in a really unique position for that.
Okay, back to the practicalities. So, Taran, how do I get access to the system? When can I expect to be able to get going?
So, Model Hospital is what you get sent a link to for your account username, and then you create your password and account very easily. And if I may add to the last question, I guess the things that would break barriers further is trainees being included in this as well. Would trainees be able to see readily how many TRPs are done by trainees? Would be a good question to answer.
That's a very good question, isn't it? Yeah. Okay, I'm feeling encouraged by this. Dicky, perhaps back to you. Will there be an opportunity for people to feedback their initial experience and suggestions about improving the system?
That's a really critical point of the whole project, Tim, and thank you for bringing that up. That's why myself and Marina from NCIP are contacting individual clinical leads to show them the process. And during that, we're getting an awful lot of really good feedback. But I want that to carry on. I think this is a project that needs to be carrying on. So once everybody's logged in and starts using it, we really do need the feedback. And Louisa at BAUS will be coordinating that so that we can understand what extra bits we want on it, what other bits on the dashboard, what's missing, how easy is it is to use? Is it user-friendly? And those sort of aspects of it that we've got and the ability, hopefully with ongoing finances and development, that we can add to it and make it a really good user-friendly tool.
Very good. Every surgeon thinks they operate on the most complicated cases and the patients with the most comorbidity, and that everybody thinks their practice is a little bit special. Does this system allow the specialness of an individual surgeon's practice to be factored into the reports?
It does. It probably could do with a little bit of improvement, but as a basic model, I think it's really successful for that. It gives you a really good idea of your volume. It gives you an idea of your length of stay. It looks at the complications with Clavien Dando 3 or above, and it also looks at your readmission. So it does give you some really good matrices of quality of how well you're doing. And you can compare it with your peers, not only within your trust, but outside. That facility is there. We need to be careful how we use that facility, but certainly it's a way forward.
I see. Greg, maybe a question to you. Would you like a system that linked into pathology as well? I mean, conventional systems don't tend to do that, do they? What would you see as the ideal system for the future?
I think what we're talking about here is linked data sets, which the technology is there now to generate huge data sets and to link across a number of sources. I think we'll see that in time. And these are important outcomes that are more meaningful when they're linked.
Yeah. The thing that really limited the operative data sets that Baus kept was the absence of any meaningful follow-up, wasn't it? Maybe reassure listeners, what's this system going to deliver in the way of follow-up that the system we've used for the last 8 or 9 years did not?
I think that is something that we need to be aiming for. But I have to not rein back, but we have to be aware that this is a new tool. We're learning how to use it. And all the things we would love to do with it are definitely possible, as Greg says. But there has got to be justification by us engaging and using it a lot. And there has to be resources behind it. But it's possible. And I think that will be a really strong thing to develop into the follow-up. I don't know if Greg wants to come back in on that, on any other thing.
No, I think you answered that really well.
And perhaps one can't have a conversation about surgical outcomes in 2021 without consideration of the consequences of the mesh debacle. Is this system and its effective use by urologists, would it prevent a mesh debacle, or is it not sophisticated enough to allow the understanding of what's happening to new materials in new products used in new ways?
That's a very challenging question, Tim. It's on everybody's mind. And I think we have to look at where NSIP is. It's now called the National Consultant Information Program. So actually that tells us who it's for. It's information for consultants. So it's there to provide a really high quality appraisal tool and revalidation. So that's the Patterson recommendation tick, because it's whole practice. It will cover your private patients eventually. So that's one tick. The other big report that came out this year was the cumbilage and the mesh problem. And there is a sort of tick being developed that NSIP possibly may be able to incorporate the need for a database on those procedures where an implant is put in. That's something that it can do. And there is a drive politically to make that happen. But I can't say whether that is going to happen sooner or rather than later.
Okay, that's very helpful. Well, I think we should draw the podcast to a close. I think this is a big change at Baus, a big change for British urologists. Just one final question. We are Baus. Is this an English system or is this a UK-wide system?
It is an English system. I know that is a problem, potentially, but I think there are solutions that may come in the future.
Right.
I can't say much more than that because it's a difficult area. But yes, it is an English system. So it's the 127 units in England. All the consultant urologists in those units will have access by the end of the year.
Okay, so the 127 units covered, maybe 40 units not covered at the moment, but to be discussed. Well, that's been very helpful. I've learned a lot. Thank you for clarifying some of these things. Looking forward to using it. I think we're closing a very good chapter in Baus's life, the outcome reporting. I think that's been a hugely successful chapter. But with the closure of that chapter opens up a different one, doesn't it? And I think there are huge opportunities here for us all to embrace. So thank you very much. And I look forward to letting you know how my technical difficulties are going. And Tarani, you're on my speed dial.